Chapter 6 Party Patrol. Welcome back to Western Michigan University. The first week of September is always a busy time for Kalamazoo Public Safety. The influx of students brings with it a feeling of fun and excitement for new and returning college students. On the other hand, for KDPS officers, especially for Zone 6 and Zone 1 PSOs, it brings with it 12-hour shifts filled with drunk and obnoxious young adults who relish the prospect of binge drinking, fighting, damaging property, stealing street signs, throwing bottles into the street, setting dumpsters on fire, drunk and drugged driving, and playing loud music that can be heard blocks away until sunrise. These students will argue that Kalamazoo is a college party town, and therefore they should be allowed to party. Unfortunately, at its climax of fun and happiness, the party can turn into a full-blown riot. Party Patrol, as it is known within the department, is an assignment that places officers in specific neighborhoods where the influx of college students takes place and where a pattern of crime develops that is predictable. First, I have to say that Party Patrol is not about stopping parties or regulating parties in any sense of the word. The term itself describes the mission of the officers assigned to the patrol. The goal is to deter all crimes and to help control the neighborhood disturbances that destroy the quality of life for the residents living in the neighborhoods. Having a party is not illegal. What is illegal is the criminal activity that takes place as a result of large crowds that congregate at the party house or apartment. A party patrol shift would typically start out around 9 in the evening and last until the early morning hours or longer, given the call volume of noise complaints, assaults, fires, or fighting incidents. At the start of the shift, the enforcement aspect usually began with a visible police presence in the given neighborhood through traffic enforcement and foot patrols. As parties were seen to be gathering at a home or apartment, an officer would simply go to the residence and make contact with the tenants or owners and have a casual conversation with the people who were hosting the party. There were three goals of this conversation. First, it was to let them know that the police were in the neighborhood and to remind them that it's okay to party until people who are not invited start arriving in mass crowds and neighborhood complaints start to get called into dispatch about excessive noise, loud music booming throughout the neighborhood, screaming or yelling and fighting. The second goal was to try to build a relationship with the party hosts, such that if the party got out of hand, they knew they could call the police for help in clearing out those unwanted guests so that their home wasn't pillaged. The third goal was to remind them, while they were in a not-so-intoxicated state, that the cops were in the area and enforcing the law. We also would let them know that the enforcement, should it take place in regard to the excessive noise ordinance, would result in a ticket or an arrest, and there would be no warnings. In addition to this aspect of community policing, we would also water down the many dumpsters in the nearby apartment complexes and nearby fraternity homes, as they would become easy targets to set ablaze for the intoxicated reveler looking for late-night excitement. You can't start a fire in a dumpster filled with water, but the unsuspecting couch on the curb takes its place. Our objective in making contact with the partygoers well before their party got out of hand was prevention. It is an effective tactic. Throughout the party patrol shift, it was commonplace for me to issue around 20 appearance and traffic tickets, as well as arrest an average of 1 to 3 people. Multiply these numbers by 5 to 10 PSOs working the patrol, and the total enforcement on a busy night would average 80 tickets and 10 arrests. This activity would also include a multitude of criminal cases being generated: violent assaultive crimes, rape, simple assaults, home invasions, property damage crime, thefts, resisting, obstructing, fleeing police, fireworks violations, fire code violations, drunk and drugged driving, minor in possession of alcohol, liquor violations, and then finally, the quality of life crimes: excessive noise, loud music, yelling, disturbing the peace, littering, urinating in public, and disorderly person. On September 9th, 2001, we lost a neighborhood. The party patrol shift started out in typical fashion. However, after I had issued a few appearance tickets for subjects walking down Lafayette Street carrying the familiar red party cup filled with beer, I noticed something was strange about the night. There seemed to be more people than normal milling about. It was warm, though, and the start of a new school year, so it was nothing out of the norm by any means, but it was noticeable. I had a feeling it would be a busy enforcement night. I had no idea the situation would soon turn into a full-blown riot. I left the neighborhood to make my way back downtown to grab a freshly brewed cup of coffee. I had been out of the neighborhood for only 15 minutes when I heard screaming over the police radio. P1 radio, we need more units on Lafayette at Redwood. We're taking bottles. I thought, what the hell? I just left there and everything was fine. As other officers were responding to the calls for assistance, I anticipated multiple arrests and drove straight to KDPS headquarters to secure the paddy wagon, several bags of flex cuffs, and my riot helmet. Excellent idea, because that's exactly what command requested while I drove away from HQ. I drove around the area of the melee to Lafayette Street, where I met Sergeant James Ray. As I exited the van, it was struck by exploding beer bottles. There were only a few officers gathered around the intersection to face a mass of thousands of revelers jam-packed in the street and front lawns of the homes in the area. We were completely outnumbered, ill-equipped, and unable to handle the situation. We had lost control. The order was given for all officers to evacuate from the area and regroup elsewhere. As I was leaving, there were a group of people who approached me. One of them asked, "Where are you going? You have to help us." I told the group, one of whom was bleeding from the face from an apparent assault, that they should just leave the area. They seemed to be in shock that the cops were leaving. I told them we'd come back. "When we do, you don't want to be here." Over the next hour, several officers organized our plan to retake the neighborhood. I was on the SWAT team at the time, so I was reassigned to the SWAT staging area. I donned a backpack full of triple chaser tear gas grenades and riot gear. Once we organized our team and the other ranks of assisting officers were organized, we began to march back into the neighborhood. As we approached, we could hear the roar of the crowd and saw an orange glow with smoke emanating from inside the neighborhood. Plainclothes officers were reporting that the crowd had set large fires in the streets and was chanting, "Let's go, Broncos, let's go!" A huge beach ball was being tossed back and forth in the crowd. Also reported were people sitting on roofs, climbing power poles, and hanging from the power lines. We marched in rank and file, cutting through the back parking lots to bypass the massive crowd. Our plan was to form our skirmish line, march in a line formation to a point where we could launch tear gas, and then push our way into the crowd and disperse the people throughout the neighborhood. This plan would allow the people an escape path out of the area, rather than pushing the crowd as a whole toward a swamp and some apartments. Our team got in a line formation with our largest officers at the front equipped with riot shields and batons. The SWAT officers were behind the main line of shields and were divided into arrest teams. A third file consisted of gas teams and backup arrest officers. Before any type of order to advance on the crowd was given, a lengthy period of verbal warnings over a loudspeaker were given to the crowd, ordering them to disperse or be arrested for violating an established police line or zone bordered by the nearby streets. Plainclothes officers within the crowd took control of the beach ball and popped it. This was the spark that made the crowd turn against the police. We were then attacked with a barrage of bottles, rocks, mailboxes, shingles, beer cans full of dirt, fence posts, and lumber set on fire. "Hold the line! Hold the line! Shields up and forward march! Stay on line! Stay on line!" It was difficult to hear the commands being given by the commanders, as their voices were drowned out by the deafening roar of the violent crowd we were marching into. Suddenly I felt an impact on my helmet and was knocked backward. I had just been struck in the head with a 40-ounce glass beer bottle, exploding beer and glass all over me. I regained my footing, wiped my face mask of the beer, and continued to move forward with our line. The main line of officers beat their batons against their shields with every other step. Whistles blew, and the command to launch the tear gas was given. Within throwing range of the main crowd, I hurled multiple triple chaser tear gas grenades into the rioters. The exploding grenades burst into three pieces of exploding canisters of tear gas. These went spinning through the air, propelling them further into the crowd. With multiple launchings at the same time, the crowd quickly moved and ran for cover. We continued to advance in a line and wedge formation, yelling through our gas masks and shining flashlights through the smoke caused by the fires and tear gas. The riot was in full effect now. The barrage of debris, beer bottles, and rocks intensified. The rooftop rioters were above us as we walked down the street, and they were hurling debris from the rooftops down onto us. We had no tactic to repel them, other than an overwhelming amount of tear gas to smoke them off the roofs. I watched as one state trooper was struck in the face and fell down behind a tree. He didn't have his face shield down and was holding his head. Another officer ran to his aid to defend him. Meanwhile, as the crowd began to run away from us, others were bowled. As we came within Super Soaker pepper spray range, we doused the hostile crowd with streams of it. They continued to curse, scream, and throw rocks, bottles, and anything else they could find to attack us with. Arrest teams tried to identify the most violent offenders who were close to our ranks throwing rocks and bottles. These violators were targeted and arrested by a group of sprinting officers who burst through our lines to chase them down and arrest them. Our lines continued to move forward and set up additional skirmish lines in front of the arrest teams to protect them as they took the offenders into custody. In the end, I had thrown 17 triple chaser tear gas grenades, was covered in beer and glass, and had been assaulted repeatedly by flying objects. For me, this was a battle. Afterward, once the rioters were dispersed and the neighborhood was secured, it looked like a war zone. The entire area was littered with debris, beer cans, bottles, shingles, uprooted mailboxes, bent over street signs, smashed out windows in parked cars alongside the road, homes damaged with siding hanging off the outside walls, and smoldering debris fires set in the streets. We took back Lafayette Street, but not without a cost. The very fabric of the neighborhood and our city was damaged. For no reason at all, there was a feeling of hatred toward city government and the police by our young adult population. This riot, although terrible, would soon fall to the wayside and be replaced by a national tragedy. Just 2 days later, our nation would be attacked on September 11, 2001. By the Michigan Daily, on September 9, 2001, Kalamazoo, AP. A party in a student neighborhood turned violent early yesterday morning, with revelers damaging cars and other property and sending two police officers to the hospital, police said. Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety Lieutenant Douglas Gurink said 21 people were arrested for charges ranging from inciting a riot to assaulting a police officer. He said 46 others received citations for underage drinking and other misdemeanors. The disturbance started around midnight Saturday when neighbors complained of noise in a largely student neighborhood, Gurink said. The area has a history of excessive noise and underage drinking, he said, but has had few problems in recent years. The disturbance wasn't on the campuses of Western Michigan University or Kalamazoo College, which are located nearby. Police estimate about 2,500 people were gathered in the streets when some began damaging street lamps, signs, and other public property and set fires in the streets. Kalamazoo police responded but were pelted with rocks, bottles, sticks, and other flying objects. Other agencies were called in, including the Western Michigan University Department of Public Safety, the Kalamazoo County Sheriff's Department, and Michigan State Police. About 55 officers in riot gear dispersed the crowd with tear gas, Gurink said. Nobody kind of realized what was going on, and all of a sudden comes this wall of riot police spraying mace and tear gas, Western Michigan student Kevin Wardleman told Grand Rapids television station WOOD-TV. People were just running, screaming down the street, terrified. If they didn't have a house to duck into like we did, I don't know what happened to a lot of the people that were just stuck out in the street, he said. Two Kalamazoo police officers were taken to Bronson Methodist Hospital, where they were treated and released for leg and hand injuries. Gurink said the majority of officers were hit with objects, but they were protected by helmets and shields. No one else was injured, Gurink said. Three police cars were damaged, along with other city and private property, but Gurink said no cost estimates were available yet. Officers had the melee under control by about 3:45 a.m., Gurink said. Police don't know what prompted the disturbance. Police are using videos taken at the scene to try to identify more suspects. We are going to do everything possible to identify those that broke the law, and we will prosecute everyone who broke law, Gurink said. Accessed from MichiganDaily.com on Saturday, October 5th, 2013.